Welcome once again to the Wizard's Edge with the Wizard himself, Jay Abraham. This is Marty Stacey, the Communications Director for the Wizard's Edge. Jay, if you're trying to get people to take that edge, is there a point that is especially crucial for you to get people to do something that you maybe struggle with them, or they struggle with getting over a particular decision point?
Yeah, I think there's about three key elements that we really work hard with people that we deal with in live encounters and in private consulting. And I think it has to do with explaining to them that it's all a function of changing the strategy they operate their life and their businesses by, the mindset that powers or empowers that strategy, that it's all a basis of communication, and that the quality of their life and the quality of their achievements is all dependent on the quality of the questions they ask themselves and others, and the quality and clarity of the answers they get. It's teaching people to think and communicate with themselves and with others in clear, integrated manner. It's all about communication, clear transference of ideas from one side to the other. It's all about, basically, respect for the intelligence and the rights of others and their points of view. It's all about learning to observe, examine, understand, appreciate, and respect how the other side is seeing a situation unfold from their point of view. We talked about empathy earlier, and teaching them that people need to be led. They are silently begging to be led. If you do it nurturously and respectfully and with trust, you can own any segment of any market you want forever. But it's an integrated process, Marty.
Do you find people are typically maybe successful in one area, or tend to apply your strategies in just one area and don't make the full transition to the questioning mindset, understanding the various parts?
Yeah, what happens is this. Most people spent their whole life achieving a fraction of what the effort, the time, the opportunity would entitle them to. When they learn my mindset, it's so profound and disarmingly simple that they will normally identify the most exciting and sometimes the easiest single application they can engage in. They will do it. It will produce, if they execute reasonably well, and execution is a key factor, a remarkable, extraordinary, a profound result, either increase or profit or windfall profit. And what tends to typically happen, unless they have somebody like me constantly nurturing, propelling them, cajoling them, pushing them, questioning them, they go back and regress back to their status quo existence. It's like a hobby or a habit. A habit takes 30 or 40 days to create, good or bad. You've got to work at it diligently. Something else that I think is integral to this is that repetition is the mother of proficiency. And most people delude themselves. They think they can take what somebody like myself expended 25 years of my life and 18 hours a day, 6-7 days a week, and constant experiments, successes, non-successes, refinements, and that they can hear it uttered and summarized and condensed for their benefit one time and garner enough of it to really be proficient and adroit and comprehend it transactionally and intellectually, and they're deluding themselves and doing themselves a horrendous disservice.
So there's a little inducement to listen to the Wizard's Edge several times to stay on track and to fully understand what you're saying.
I would suggest the following. If I were the recipient or the subscriber to this service, I would suggest that you not only agree to listen to it at least 5 times in the first week it arrives, and that requires you to invest 5 times 90 or 450 minutes, which is 5 hours over a week. However, I would say that I'm giving you the results of what took me conceivably 500 hours to master, and that if I were explaining this to you, even in the hour and a half, you would have to pay me, $4,500. So it's not a bad investment on your part. After I listened to it, if I were you, I would give the tape to 5 other people in the course of the next month to listen to at least twice and report back to you the implications that they got. One of the most interesting and powerful realizations I make to people when I do live training programs is about every 2 hours I will stop and summarize, and I'll go around the room and arbitrarily pick out 20 participants in the room who have been in that room with the remaining 200, who have listened exactingly to the same message, the same examples, the same points, the same principles, the same laws I have uttered, I will ask them, Marty, to summarize what they specifically and individually got most out of it and what the implication that they can act upon in their business or in their life is. And if you interview 20 people, you'll get 18 different insights.
All right.
And that's where you start expanding. That's where you get yourself this exponential perspective. So I would leverage what you have invested in me for by giving it to other people who have different life perspectives, live different life experiences, different points of view, different knowledge bases, different interest levels, different attributes and philosophical and mental disciplines, and ask them, too, to listen and summarize for you the implications to them, because if you get five people to do that, you've just expanded your benefit and your leverage from this encounter by 500%.
Okay, yeah, I could see how they could actually help me understand what you're saying more than I could myself.
I agree, and I would start with people in your business, but then I would take it outside, but ask them to tell you what they think the implication that they've listened to about it is for you in your business, because they'll get the benefit of the experience for themselves just by listening. You'll have gifted them $1 million education in the process, but ask them to come back to you and say, I listened to that 90-minute session of The Edge. Here's what I think it's most specifically and transactionally saying to you. And by the way, it's very important that you discipline yourself when listening to this or when being exposed to anybody else to always do and connect this concept of extrapolation and transactional implication. Don't just say, well, that feels good, I'm going to be a great leader. You've got to force yourself immediately upon discovering and being taught the various principles to immediately establish in your mind what the specific transactional implication of that statement, that idea, that method, that concept, that technique, that law, that principle is, and how you can take transactionally immediate and best action specifically and in highly detailed manner. If you can't come up with what it means in detailed manner to you, you're not going to do anything with it, and it's a waste. You've wasted your money. You've wasted your 90 minutes.
Explain the term just briefly, transactionally interacting.
Well, what I'm saying to you is this. We talked in one of our interviews about leadership. We'll probably talk more about it today. I gave them 15 or 20 key factors, key elements, key strategic essences that had contributed to a massive, massive, massive quantum leap that a client of mine had been able to engineer. When you hear each one of those, you've got to stop mentally and say, what is the direct transactional message that means to me? What is the direct applicational action or transaction I can take within my specific business tangibly and immediately based on what I just heard? Because if you don't translate concept and theory and principles to very specific implications and applications, you'll do nothing or you'll do very little. You'll do certainly massive times less with it than you are entitled to and that it could be performing for you.
All right, let's transfer over now to the discussion of this company that so impressed you, one of your clients in Australia. We'll call it Company X. I would guess at this point in your career, it's pretty hard to impress you, Jay.
Well, it's hard to impress me with a cohesive philosophical or strategic fabric that is so powerful that it overcomes and blocks about every other strategy of any of your competitors. It's not often that I see anyone who's got it all together. Most people have one part of the puzzle. And to show you how few people employ any or many of the power principles that they have available to them, normally the company that has one, just one element in place can outwit most of their competitors. Somebody that has two or three can perform circles around them. But this company had such a cohesive, a well-defined, and such a super strategic and integrated understanding that it really awed me. I was very visibly impacted by it.
And you're calling this their strategy for preeminence.
I call it their strategy for preeminence. They just call it basically their internal positioning, but I think it's far more profound than that. I think it's a strategy that any individual can use, whether he or she owns a business, runs a business, is a key employee in a business, wants to be a key employee in a business, wants to utilize it in their personal life, in their marriage, in their family, in their friends, in any endeavor they ever find themselves. It's a universal philosophy for gaining the most distinctive, the most influential, the most powerful, the most successful results and performance in any endeavor you wish to engage. I think it's very powerful.
All right, let's, if we can, begin kind of where we left off last month and have you just jump into this session. Once again, you really have not shared this with terribly many groups, so this is information before it's given out to many, many clients.
This is the first semi-public time I have ever documented these principles other than the people who paid me $5,000 in Australia and 180 people who paid me an equivalent amount in the U.S. With the exception of 180 people in North America, no one else in business or in this hemisphere has ever heard this strategy shared, uttered, connected, and defined.
Okay, maybe take us back just a little bit to where we were last month. You were roughly about halfway through your presentation.
I don't remember if I said this or not. If I did, I'm going to be redundant because redundancy, when you're talking about something that can catapult you 10 or 20 times where you are now in a handful of years, it's a meager price to pay for achievement, so I'm going to be redundant if maybe. It's very important, Marty, that everybody wishing to adopt the strategy of preeminence realizes that show me is always more powerful than tell me. And by that I mean illustrate it, demonstrate it, prove it graphically, dimensionally, contrast it, measure it, demonstrate it in life action, in pictures or in words or in examples. The more you dimensionalize, the more you demonstrate, the more you illustrate, the more real and the more I can embrace what you're trying to advocate. Very powerful. Just telling you something is like me saying, no, Marty, you can buy a car. We're talking about a car example in one of our interviews. You can buy a car for less than they offer at the dealer. That's a definitive statement. I've told you a fact. Your response is, so what? But if I show you how to do it, and I show you why you can do it, and I demonstrate how other people have done it, and I illustrate why people would be very compelled to do it for you, and why owners would be very eager to sell you a car at far less than they paid for it, then it becomes real, and you can believe in it, and you can gain conviction and desire and take action. Does that make sense?
It does. I assume to change to that mindset might take some discipline.
I think the only discipline it should take is an awareness, an immediate awareness that everything most people have done in their business, in their job, in their personal lives to this point forward have been sub-optimized, if I can use a little bit of a complex word. They have allowed themselves a fraction of the result, a fraction of the reward, a fraction of the success, a fraction of the effectiveness they were entitled to because they consumed themselves, they exalted themselves and their self-interest ahead of the other sides by recognizing the factors immediately and continuously that human beings require to take ownership, to buy in, to gain trust, to be compelled to action. I would think everybody who has denied themselves so much of what they could have reaped out of any transaction they engaged in, any action, any career, any business, any investment financially or emotionally, would want to immediately, instantly stop minimizing what they got out of the effort. I would think everybody would want instantly just because they've given themselves more pain and there's a lot more reward for doing it a different way. I would think if I said to you, Marty, one way of conducting yourself is going to give you four times the income, four times the joy, four times the respect from your friends, your family, your customers, your employees, four times the lifestyle, why in the world would you want to wait any time past the moment to start doing it?
Okay.
I think people have to think about it in that context.
All right. Go ahead with the strategy of preeminence here.
Okay, we talked about show me is more powerful than tell me. Instead of making conclusive statements, you've got to give me, the customer, a prospect, ammunition that allows me to come to that conclusion myself. I think I talked in the other session about taking ownership. When you take ownership, it's yours. You've given it, you, in your mind, you've given birth to it. It's your idea. You're far more convicted. You're far more passionate. It's far more real. It's far more important for it to come to fruition. If it's my idea and I'm trying to thrust it upon you, you have an inherent desire or tendency to reject it, to semi-embrace it, to defer on it, because it's not your problem, it's mine. So it's very important that I, as the selling entity, that I, as the company or the business owner, recognize that the more I can provide conclusive statements that you can weave together to evolve at the decision I want as if it were your own, where you come up with more ownership, more pride, more conviction behind it, that's going to compel you to take much quicker and much more enduring action than if I try to force my thoughts upon you. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. It makes good sense.
Okay. You never want to draw the conclusion for someone else. You want them to take an action that makes a commitment. That's why the best way to compel or persuade somebody is through a series of conclusive statements where they keep adding to it and coming up with validation. When I am trying to ever persuade or sell anybody on my point of view or my concept, I give them illustrations, I give them questions, I give them mental or transactional little tests that I want them to try instantly in their mind or in their business that will prove to them definitively and conclusively that my point of view is better for them because they're getting a better outcome or an easier outcome or more rich or pleasurable outcome. And that's what you want to keep doing, is laying on little tests that people can validate instantly in their mind or right there, or if it's not a one-shot sale, in the course of their life or their business, in the duration that occurs between the time you present it and the next time you see them.
All right. I see how that works.
Okay. If they don't take action themselves, if there's no ownership that they can see, that they gave birth to, there's no power in it. People discount a series of abstract statements. They want to evolve a series of conclusions to come to their ownership. In other words, you take them on a series of conclusive statements where they've got to say to themselves, yes, that makes sense. Yes, that produces a better result. Yes, that's a better way of doing it than the way I have been doing it. Yes, that gives me a greater outcome. So the only conclusion, ultimately, the only massive or macro conclusion they could come to at the end of three or four of these conclusive series is, I need that for my betterment, not because you want me to have it for your financial enrichment. Does that make sense?
It makes sense.
So that's the process.
All right.
Always remember, show me, don't tell me. Show me both sides of the quotient. Show me how right now I'm satisfying myself with 22% less. Show me what 22% more looks like in many different ways, like more for the investment, more yield for the time, the same yield for 22% less time. Show me four or five different ways it makes sense so I can see it, so I can validate it, so I can appreciate it, so it's real and demonstrated in my mind. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, and I can kind of understand how there's twice as much energy involved in this whole transaction if the other person is involved.
It's more than twice. It goes from arithmetic to geometric. The moment I get you to take ownership, the moment I get you empowered, your power is going to be many times more profound, more potent, more intense and concentrated than any power I can ever have, because it's all about you. You've been actually fighting me, so you've been disempowering my message the old way I've been selling. Now there's going to be a clear, unimpeded path. There's going to be a connected circuit right to your brain and your heart and your heartstrings and ultimately your purse strings.
All right, I understand.
Any claim you make, Marty, I, the customer, must agree with, or you've broken the circuit. Does that make sense?
Makes sense.
You can make all of those, people don't understand. They make a litany of claims, but they don't make certain I agree with the conclusions, because they just make them. They make them in non-conclusive statements. They make them just as definitive statements, not conclusions that I can embrace, understand, agree with, and concur with myself.
All right.
People can't agree with most claims unless they can think them through themselves. Too many people go right to the conclusion or the definitiveness without walking people through the process and letting them evaluate, construct it, put themselves in a little mental experiment, see it demonstrated in their mind or in front of them. You got to take people in the whole process or it doesn't work. A little story is appropriate now, and it's probably, I don't tell it well, but it makes great sense. There was a man once who was the ultimate number one salesperson for Kirby vacuum cleaner. Anybody who's ever bought a Kirby vacuum cleaner or seen it demonstrated knows that it's a very complicated process. The first process is the salespeople go all afternoon and morning knocking on doors, making mini presentations that last 5 to 10 minutes where they basically go through a short course overview and a slight little demonstration in words, not in the home, of what the process and what the result is going to be. And that process is necessary to secure a quality interview in the evening. If they make a certain number of mini presentations, they will secure a lesser number of full presentational appointments for the evening.
Okay.
When you make the right full presentation in the evening, you sell a finite number of Kirbys. This man was the ultimate. He could make 50 great mini presentations a day, and he secured 5 full presentations a night, and in those full presentations, he sold 3.2, and he made hundreds of thousands of dollars, which for Kirby was a lot of money back then. But the man was trying to get more efficient, more efficient, more efficient, and he kept cutting down the mini presentation to where he took it from 10 minutes to 2 minutes. It got right down to its core essence. He kept cutting down his live, full-blown 90-minute presentation to where he got it down to 20 minutes. He's cutting out all the key demonstrations, etc. The ultimate result was he put himself out of business. And the lesson is it takes a process. It's like fishing. You don't throw in the line and immediately yank it up. You let out some slack. You let the fish get it. You let them go a little bit. You let the process develop. It's no different with what we're talking about. You've got to provide a series of conclusions. You've got to make these claims, and I must agree with them. So for me to agree with them, you've got to let me in behind the scenes on the method to the madness, the how and the why and the wherefore that you went through to establish those claims. So I understand the basis. I agree with the integrity behind it. I am invested, and I take ownership. Does that make sense?
Well, I think about the vacuum cleaner salesman, in a way he decided not to involve the concept of time and his whole view of the world there.
That's exactly right. Now, keep in mind, if people can't agree with most claims unless they think them through, you've got to make everything you do communicationally with me, the prospect, predicated upon an advocacy of my perspective. As I said, I may have said this yesterday. I may have said it in a conversation I had with somebody else because I did a radio interview yesterday. When I consult with a client company, their interests are of no concern to me. I push them out of the way in my mindset. I'm looking totally at their customer, and I'm advocating, championing, protecting, respecting, enhancing, improving, contributing, and adding value to their point of view. I am advocating their customer's perspective, not my client's. You as a business owner or a professional or an aspiring business owner or an employee, you've got to always advocate the view of your customer. Your customer, if you are a business, is your employee, your suppliers, and ultimately your buyers or your prospects. Your customer, if you're an employee, is your employer or your department manager or your coworkers who are necessary for you to have the leverage to get the better outcome you can that will give you performance, growth, rewards, raises, distinction, and success. If it's in your life, you've got to advocate the perspective of your family, your wife, your husband, your loved one, your children. When you turn your mind from internal to external, when you make the whole focus of your basis the other side's point of view, when you start fully understanding, fully examining, fully respecting, maybe not agreeing, but at least respecting the point of view, the perspective, the goals, the hopes, the dreams, the fears, the problems, the issues, the whole perspective the other side is at and taking and probably going through as you are communicating with them or trying to transact with them or interact with them, it gives you a power It gives you an advantage. It gives you a connectivity that is unsurpassed.
All right. We have about an hour left, Jay, and I'm just concerned that I get all of this strategy of preeminence.
Okay, well, let me move forward because I'm on page 10 of my notes, and I have about 9 more pages. Got to realize most people think nonverbally, but they feel more than think. I am tired of being controlled. The system controls me. Your industry controls me. The business controls me. My employees control me. My customers control me. The government controls me. People want to have more control. Your whole goal has got to be to take people out of transactional frustration, and you've got to do that through helping them get a success level that's comfortable for them. You've got to give them the power to see that they can give themselves more control and more success. You do that by reducing the hurdle with which they can get started. You show them how and why there's a better way. You show them how they can get started easier, and that means a lot of different things. That may mean you take them on a preview. You put them in touch with other people. You let them try a smaller version. You let them borrow or use without risk something. You let them visit or talk to other people. You take them on a mental picture of what it's going to be like when they have it. You have your team of people come in and help them determine how they can best use something or give them an estimate of what the result will be for them if they use something, if it's a high-ticket item. Does this all make sense, Marty?
Yeah, it really does.
Okay. In order for you to connect most with people and to achieve this philosophy at its highest level, you've got to be willing to talk to them about their frustrations and about the desires that they either feel or sense. And remember what I said in the previous session, most people have never put verbiage, they've never given clear focus to the frustrations they feel on an issue, to the problems they are feeling, to the discomfort or the gnawing dis-ease, just basically the ambivalence or the apathy or the queasiness that they feel about certain issues. You've got to be able to put words into their mind, put dimension into those feelings on the negative side, and then connect those to a clarified picture of what they want it to look like on the positive side, a picture of what they want and what they deserve and what is possible that they can get in the form of a better outcome result-wise. Keep in mind, I said in the other session, you're not selling a product. You are not selling a service. You're not selling your company. You're selling really and truly, when it all comes down to it, the improved result, the buyer, the customer, the individual, the man, the woman, the company, will reap in their life, in their business, in their finances, in their whatever the application of your product or service is. And until you realize that, you can't really help them appreciate and desire and take ownership of wanting more out of the transaction. When they do that, you help them do that by painting a clear, tightly focused, clearly dimensionalized picture of what they could and should expect it to look like when they've gotten more out of it than they have been in the past. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because if they had the problem thoroughly visualized and the solution thoroughly visualized, they probably would have already solved the problem. So
that's right. So if you look at it from the highest level of benefit, you are in this wonderful position where you're bringing clarity to people in two modes. For the first time often in their lives, you're helping them realize why they've been frustrated about something and what it is that's frustrating them, and you're giving them an explanation of that demystifies and defrustrates them. You're showing them exactly what, why, and how they can give themselves a far greater result. And then you're showing them why they deserve and they're entitled and they owe it to themselves, not to you, to do that. And from that point of view and that mindset, great things can always be accomplished because they want it more than you do now.
All right.
Make sense?
Yes, a lot of sense.
Okay. Keep in mind and recognize people worry continuously, not consciously but unconsciously, about whether or not they stand out, whether or not they are unique, whether people will care about them. The more you give them the power to stand out favorably, the more you give them an advantage that is unique and they're not feeling average or normal or run-of-the-mill, the more they feel like you genuinely care, and that can only be made evident to them if you do genuinely care. If their well-being, if their perspective, if their point of view, if their improvement, if their enhancement, if their betterment is first and foremost on the top of your purpose mind and not your betterment, if you're not obsessed with enriching yourself, if you're not obsessed with making money, if you're not obsessed with your own success, but you're obsessed with falling in love and enriching and enhancing and contributing more value to the lives and the businesses and the well-being of your customers, that will be evident.
I can understand that.
And it's much more passionate for you. You'll get much more out of the process.
Well, I was just going to say, that's kind of surprising to me as I've talked to you that comes out. I never really understood where the joy came from.
Does it make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, imagine right now, part of the joylessness of life is that all people are doing it for is to make money or to make the paycheck, and they just see doing it today, going home, fighting the battle, doing it again, maybe losing ground, maybe doing a little better, and never getting anything, and they don't get a lot out of it emotionally. Remember I said in one of the other interviews that money, tangible-based issues are probably the least significant basis people get joy and fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
It's true not just to your customers, but to you. You owe it to yourself to do this because it dimensionalizes and increases a factor of probably 10 times the passion, the joy, the fulfillment, the achievement, the challenge, the excitement, the liberation feelings you get from being in your own business.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
All right. Continue. When you're communicating with people, keep in mind this. Most people are restricting and limiting the amount of business and the frequency of business and the enjoyment of doing business with them that their customers could have because they don't give them these answers. They don't give them this communication. They don't give them this connectivity. They don't give them this ability to take ownership. You as a business owner should rejoice in the awareness that the problems you have been struggling with have nothing to do with competition. They have nothing to do with the recession. They have nothing to do with the economy. They have nothing to do with foreign competition or intervention. They have nothing to do with ambivalence in the marketplace. They have everything to do with the fact that you and you alone have restricted and limited the customer's ability to transact more business and be loyal and be more continuous of a customer because you haven't helped them see why it's to their self-serving advantage, not yours.
Mm.
That's an interesting insight, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. The chief impediment there is me.
See, you don't have the right to make me the customer by less than I want to make my life richer. You have the obligation and the responsibility to help me understand how I can make my life perform the best or my business, how I can get the greatest result now and on an ongoing basis. And oftentimes it's not by buying erratically or buying less or buying a lesser quality of your product or service. It's by buying more and buying more often, and you owe me. You have the responsibility to me, the customer, to help me see how much more my life will be enriched and what a greater result I can get by doing that.
If a person were to start a business and use this, I would guess this would shave years of bad experience off and increase profits from the very beginning.
I have had relatively successful men particularly, but I've had women too, ages 60, 70, who are entrepreneurs, who are successful, making $300,000-$400,000, come up to me at the end of revealing this kind of information and literally cry and say, I wish I had had this information 25 years ago. Two things are evident. I would have been 10 times more successful, and I would have been able to have so much more joy and use my time so much more joyously, and had so much more that I would have accomplished, and I would have impacted so many and enriched the lives of so many more people, including had a greater connection with my own loved ones. So my answer to you is yes, Marty. I mean, that's why I'm doing this, is to try to share this with people who wouldn't or couldn't justify traveling 3,000 miles and paying $5,000 or $25,000 to spend time in group or privately with me.
All right.
Don't make your customers buy less than they want or that they deserve. Okay, the concept that we're trying to teach is sometimes a little too difficult for people listening to this tape to understand. So it's really important when you're trying to make points to your customers that you give them examples of how things work so they can appreciate it. When you're describing things, you give them what I'll call reference examples or metaphorical reference examples. I'm not going to go through an elaborate scientific explanation of the interworkings of the mind, Marty, but a lot of people that I worked with who are experts in what neuro-linguistic conditioning and programming, which is a study of the way the mind thinks, responds, predictably reacts to words, pictures, experiences, have said that a lot of times when we're trying to communicate in the context of selling or influence, i.e., persuading someone to see our either advantage or our point of view or buy our product or our positioning, we make the mistake of giving them a complex explanation first and then affixing it to an example. In other words, and I sometimes am even guilty of that, even though I'm teaching it, I one time was trying to explain the concept of unique selling proposition. And I said, unique selling proposition is the single most distinguishing advantage you hold out in your marketplace and that your company represents and telegraphs to customers that gives the customer a greater advantage than anybody, any other company they can deal with. Now, that sort of makes sense, doesn't it, Marty?
Right.
But if I give you a better example and give you the example first and say, Marty, you know how Federal Express used to say, if it absolutely, positively has to be there by 10 o'clock the next day, Federal Express?
Right.
Well, that's an example of a USP. Or if I said, Marty, you know how Domino's Pizza used to say, hot, fresh, delicious pizza delivered to your door in 30 minutes or it's yours free?
Mm-hmm.
That's an example of a USP. Metaphoric examples, reference examples, put ahead of explanations makes it easier for the interworkings of the mind to grasp, understand, embrace, and appreciate a point you're making.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a key reference example to people when trying to utilize the essence of what I've already shared, because you've got to realize that a lot of this deals with your ability to explain transactionally the process or the basis or the findings or the clinicals or the whole concept through which you got the conclusions you want to give somebody. And if sometimes you do them and your inclination is to do them in technocratese, the kind of language you speak in your own industry, and most lay people don't know that, and you're going to confuse them because you're going to put the technical language first before you explain the point, you've got to discipline yourself to make a metaphorical example first before you explain the point. In other words, just do what I just said. Does that make sense?
Well, it does. I've longed for someone to do that when I've been taught, and it's done so rarely.
But doesn't it make sense?
A lot of sense.
It's like what I just showed you, and I'm a practitioner of it, and I'm still a hypocrite because I used to basically always try to explain the most powerful element of a business positioning, the unique selling proposition, by explaining the technical construction of it first and then defining it. Instead of showing an easy metaphorical example first that everyone can easily relate to and then explaining it and then defining it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you reverse the process when you're using this to communicate with your customers and prospects, it'll give you dramatically greater success levels.
Okay.
Also, when you're communicating, you got to communicate the essence to people of this. Let me show you, Marty, what we do and how we do it and how we see the situation and how our approach works and how we basically see your situation from our point of view as if we were in your shoes, so you can basically sign on because it makes better sense to you, not because it makes better sense to us.
Say that another way.
Well, the trick is when you're interacting with a prospect or a customer, you want to demonstrate to them that your goal is not to sell them. It's to show them. It's to show them how you see life, how you see the situation, how you see their situation with empathy and respect for where they are, so they can see how you've approached it, how you have put your strategy for them together and why, and make sure that it makes sense to them, that it takes in consideration aspects, elements, factors, and issues that they may never have fully valued, so that together you can decide whether or not it does make sense.
All right, I understand.
Keep in mind, most people really don't know what to do. They don't even know why to do it. Your job has got to be to help me with my next transaction or my next decision. It's one thing to talk about the future, what's going to happen in 30 years. That's a very far distance. If you can try to condition yourself to dealing with the next and the next step when you're communicating with people, it makes it much easier for them to embrace it because it's comforting. It's less threatening. It's easier. It's broken down to shorter, little, non-threatening components. Mm-hmm. Like the concept of how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time?
Yeah.
Same thing. People are searching, Marty, for ways to make the next decision better, to solve their problem today. If you deal with today's problems as part of the process of getting to conclusion for the big picture, you make it much easier for them to accept, embrace, and get excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because most people are consumed with the moment. For a lot of people, tomorrow and yesterday don't even matter. They're really illusory terms if you think about them. I don't want to go into psychology or philosophy, but the moment is all that most people live in. Make sense?
Yeah, it does. I had not thought of that before.
People come aboard your business, they buy in, because in general, they want to be better off than they are now. And they need you to do that by helping them see specifically and measurably and tangibly how and how much better off their situation can be. It applies to everything. I was just thinking, well, Marty might say, well, tell me about it in a little context. I was thinking even as silly a thing as buying an ice cream cone, if you can show me how for the expenditure of effort and time and calories, I'm going to get like four times the taste and the joy out of the thing, and it's going to melt in my mouth, and there are ingredients that are so rich and so fulfilling that if I'm going to indulge myself, I might as well have the best possible fruit and the best possible ingredients and the best possible experience while I'm going to – does that make sense?
Yeah, even in something like an ice cream
cone. I'm trying to think. I'm trying to advocate your perspective as the advocator of the people listening to this tape. I'm sort of having a little non-verbalized discussion with myself, so I get a little tangential. Bear with me, Marty. Most people do business and make what they do subject matter focused. What you have to do is make everything you do individually focused. Most businesses, when they're advocating a matter or a product or an issue, they are subject matter focused. Your goal has got to be, when you are communicating with a prospect, to be individually focused. And the individual means their individual situation.
All right. Let's talk about that on side two.
Okay.
You're talking about focusing on individuals instead of subjects.
In other words, if you're talking about – let's talk about financial planning, all right?
Okay.
Well, if I'm talking about how important financial planning is to you, Marty, that's subject matter. If I say, Marty, it's important to me that the effort you expend every 10-hour day that you work for the next 20 years gives you the greatest outcome, gives you the chance to have the greatest joy out of your life, gives you the chance for you, Marty, to have the security, gives you and your wife the chance to do everything you want, to live in the house you want, to have the comfort levels you want, to take the trips you want, to have the security you want. Does that make sense? It's a big difference.
Well, it's a massive difference.
One subject matter and one is individual. One is basically saying, I'm tying this into your specific situation now and in the future. Everything I'm doing is focused on what it means to you transactionally, not generically. Generically is subject matter. Transactionally is your life.
I guess the thing that has surprised me in talking with you is that I think there's kind of a mass perception that people in marketing don't care about people. What is grossly surprising is, as I understand the J. Abraham view of life and view of business, you're more concerned about the individual than people could imagine.
Well, for two reasons. Self-servingly, if I don't or won't or wouldn't be, I would get so little joy out of it that I would be as apathetic and as burned out as everybody else, and my success level would falter. I mean, most of the people you're talking about aren't that successful, and they're loathing. They live – I mean, if you live for retirement, you know, why do anything that gives you no joy? Why invest the largest part of your waking day and your human capital investment and your financial investment in something that gives you less joy – then you're entitled to. I think you got to be able to find the ultimate passion, the ultimate fulfillment, the ultimate excitement out of every hour you expend in life, and that can't happen unless you got a higher and better purpose. You got to help the individual through mastery of the subject matter by helping school them on the purpose so they can think better. They got to see the purpose something has to their specific life. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Most people don't. And as I just told you, if I tell you, Marty, you got to have financial planning, that doesn't get you excited. If I say, Marty, if you have the chance this week to expend effort, and that effort could produce $10,000 for you, and if you do it right, that $10,000, seven of it could remain in your bank account. Now, that seven, if you do it right, it could produce, in the course of any 10-year period, it could buy you a house three times as much and have it paid for, and you could have another business that would throw off another $7,000 a week for life for you. And that's a different strategy, but it takes no more time, no more effort, just a different approach than you're doing now. That's a lot more exciting than saying, Marty, you got to do financial planning.
I'll grant you that. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So keep in mind, when you're communicating with a customer or a prospect, you're only talking to them for a very short period of time. Your goal is to be the liberator. If you think through history, political history particularly, almost everyone who liberated a populace was exalted. They were rewarded. They were heralded. They were installed as president. They became enriched, weren't they?
Yes.
George Washington was. I'm sure in a lot of foreign countries, the liberators were. They were, you know. And so your goal is to become the liberator of people's awareness of what is possible, of what they can give themselves, of how much more of a result or outcome they can get out of a transaction.
All right.
Okay. And when you do that, it's a shift in perspective that all of a sudden opens up all kinds of new solutions and possibilities you can render to people.
Okay.
By approaching your business as coming up with alternative points of view that the normal people in your industry would never entertain, by looking at things in behalf of your customers in an unconventional way, you help people find liberty or liberation. And this all comes from helping them look at life and at their business, at the implications, in very different ways than everybody else would have them do or is content to do or has learned to do. You want to be a liberator. When problems get solved for people, revelations occur. Have you ever noticed that? When I help you solve a dilemma or a problem by giving you a better explanation or a better solution, normally a revelation occurs. It's no longer frustrating. You're no longer mystified. You have power over it, and that's revelational for you.
All right, yeah, I understand that.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I
if I've done my job correctly, Marty, on these interviews, it is very empowering. It's explaining to you and connecting dots on the reason why other people are so much more successful than you might be in a transaction, or why certain people get greater results from doing things than you have, and why you could too. And it's very liberating, and it should be very enlightening, very illuminating, and very revelational, because it gives you power.
Mm-hmm.
Trite but true. Knowledge is power. You're giving people this knowledge. You're empowering people. When they're empowered, they trust you because they trust their liberator, their creator, so to speak. You've created their awareness. Does that make sense?
Yes.
A little bit esoteric, but a very powerful distinction that everyone should recognize, because that explains the dynamism of what goes on.
Okay.
But when you do this, you make people all of a sudden very comfortable with a lot of things, issues, subjects, topics, areas that in the past they were very intimidated by. You can take people to a much higher level of involvement, interest, discussion, possibility, commitment than they'd ever allowed themselves before, because you've demystified it for them. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, it does.
You've extended your knowledge and understanding of key business or key life issues and transformed or translated or transferred your knowledge through the torque conversion of its explanatory basis I overviewed in this and in the previous session. You've given the customer prospect a way that they have power, and they feel more comfortable, and they feel more in control, because now they understand the implications, the method to the madness, the interreaction, the interrelationships of things.
I did not understand that, in essence, whenever a customer comes into my store or however I encounter my prospect or potential customer, they're actually in some form experiencing a disorder in their lives. Something's out of control.
Well, doesn't that make sense?
Yes, yes.
And your goal is to give them this confidence, this total control. You don't want to control them. You want them to feel like they're controlling you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it's not ego and it's not pride. It's respect. Respect for the feelings and the way their minds work, and understanding that if you help them get what they want, they'll give you more of what you want.
Now, in Company X, did the entire staff understand all of this?
They were an incredible integrated machine. They all understood, articulated, demonstrated, manifested, sustained, and perpetuated this philosophy in everything they did internally and externally, from their communications, their ads, their letters, their sales presentations, to the way the phone was answered, to the way problems were solved, to the way customer service is dealt, to the way they hired people, to the way they dealt with people internally, to the way they dealt with vendors. Yes.
Okay.
It was an integrated process.
Okay,
keep in mind, the difference between your company and all your competitors should be, from this point forward, you are totally focused on the individual. You have fallen in love with your prospect, not your product. When you're interacting with them in any form, on the phone, in a letter, in person, in your offices, in your store, in your retail, your order department, it's you and the customer have an opportunity of being together for a few minutes or for an hour. And your challenge has got to be, how much value, how much benefit, how much contribution can you make to them in that period? So it's got to be predicated on a three-pronged understanding. Number one, you have to give them constantly great advice. Number two, you must be able to express that advice well, and well doesn't mean eloquent. Well means clear and compelling. There's an old story about two orators in ancient Greece. One was silver-tongued, and they were trying to rouse the populace to fight an impending infidel who was encroaching on the borders. And the silver-tongued man spoke, and when he was done speaking, everyone said, "Oh, what an eloquent and wonderful speech." The other man wasn't as eloquent, but he empathized and advocated and championed the feelings, the desires, the point of view of the populace. He was awkward, and he was rough behind the edges, and he was anything but smooth, but he was sincere and connected and totally externally focused. When he was done, they said, "Let's march." So you got to realize what you want is not to be said, "Wow, what a great salesman," or "What a great presentation." But people to say, "I didn't know that. I absolutely want that for myself." Does that make sense?
Yes.
And you must want to express it. You've got to be able to express it from their point of view, and you must want to express it with this conviction and commitment to make them the focal point of everything you do, because your goal has got to be to constantly provide better, more enriching, and enrichment doesn't just mean financial, it means on all gradients of enrichment, solutions to your customer's problem. Keep in mind, most people spend their entire lives getting only a fraction of the yield they can out of their endeavors. That goes for you, the business owner, but it more goes for your customer. They deny themselves so much more outcome they could get from the same or less effort. Your challenge, your obligation, your commitment, your gift, your wonderful opportunity is to help them get so much more out of everything they do. That's pretty much it, Marty.
All right. How about a three-sentence Jay Abraham wizard summary of the strategy for preeminence?
Okay. Understand and empathize with where your prospect and customer is coming from on every gradient you can identify. Financially, emotionally, and not just in the limited constraints of the transactional area you're dealing with, but in the more global or totalistic or holistic essence of their lives. Number two, be committed to producing and rendering great advice and putting their interest ahead of yours. Number three, fall in love with them, not the product or service. Number four, always be individually focused, not generically product focused. Number five, always demonstrate and show them. Don't just tell them. Let them into the method to your madness, the reason why, the intricacies that bring something to it. Liberate them. Give them control. Don't control them. Don't deny them the opportunity to buy more and more often, because in doing so, most often you limit their ability to get a greater outcome for themselves, and you owe them more. And respect them. That's it.
All right. Now, can I jam your brain on fast forward?
Yes.
I think as I first heard about the Wizard's Edge, as you think about those of us listening to the tape and thinking about your abilities, how in the world do you find good ideas? You're a wizard at doing that.
Well, I can tell you how you find or create ideas in a nutshell. They're new combinations of old things in new ways. What you got to do is discipline yourself to do a couple of things. Number one, you've got to constantly be aware of all aspects of transactional life. That's a little confusing. You got to be aware and constantly look at what's going on. You got to look at new associations, how things interreact or interrelate.
Okay. Can I pretend like I'm on a telephone with you consulting?
Yes.
And I have a particular business. What are you going to do as I describe my business?
The first thing I want to do is learn two things: what you're doing right, what you're doing wrong, what you're not doing, who your customer is, what they want, what you sell, how you sell it, whether you're selling it or whether you're selling its result, what the result is, how the result can be denominated, what your competitor is doing, what they're not doing, what advantage you might have that your competitor either doesn't or doesn't utilize, what the basis for buying is predicated on right this moment, basically how many ways we can take your product from a commodity where you have no advantage to a proprietary where you have all the advantage. I want to see how much risk is involved in the transaction on the part of the customer and on the part of you. And I want to see what the predictable result or performance elements of using your product or applying your product or accomplishing or utilizing or buying your product is for the end user. And I want to know how we can denominate that and how we can take that denomination and put it into a guarantee or a risk reversal. I want to know how we can reward you for taking the risk, how we can lower the barrier of entry and make it easier instead of harder. That's pretty much it.
All right. Can I talk to you about a strategy that you've used a lot, follow up with telemarketing?
Sure.
It's been immensely successful for the people you've had to use that.
Well, there's a flaw and a fallacy in the way most business owners look at communication. They don't realize, they delude themselves to think when they send a letter out to somebody that somebody's got nothing else to do in their life but stop everything, read that letter. If the letter's not written well or confusing or it's not as telegraphing of the self-serving result, work hard to figure out what's in it for them, understand it all, take immediate action, stop everything, respond. In the reality of life, three things happen. Half the letters that are sent don't get received. Half the letters that get received don't get read. Half the letters that get read don't get acted on, not because people aren't interested, but because people's lives are so complex, so prevailed upon. There's so many day-to-day catastrophes, crises, imperatives that prevail upon us that we defer, we procrastinate, we put aside things that aren't instantly critical, even though we might have incredible interest. Ask yourself, how many times have you been impacted by an ad, a letter, an offer, something in the mail that you actually had very strong interest in, but you weren't compelled to take interest this very moment? You either said, I'm going to go down there, I'm going to call them, and you either put it aside or you mentally put it aside, and the freneticism and the chaos and the diversion in your life occurred to such a level you forgot totally about it?
Yeah, sometimes I think it's amazing I act on anything.
So what we've learned is that whenever you make a letter or a mailing or any formal communication, even a sales call, if you go behind it and follow it up with a telephone call with an intelligent person calling behind saying, Marty, I sent you a letter. I know you're busy. I'm calling for a number of reasons. First, did you get the letter? If you got the letter, did you understand that the letter basically told you that we realize you're not getting the fullest benefit you can out of such and such, and we've put together a way you can do this by offering you such and such, and we want you to consider doing this not for us but for you, because if you do this, it can increase your blank by blank percent or by this degree. And that's not just idle words. We've observed in all our other customers that the average customer, when they do this, gets a blank time improvement in what they're doing. And we want that so badly for you that we made you an offer that you could try it out in your home or in your business for the next 15 days for no risk. And we've even reduced the cost and added to it the following benefit. And we want to make absolutely certain, because it's a limited offer, we don't have enough of them for all our customers, that you particularly got the letter, recognized it, understood the advantage, and had the fullest opportunity to take advantage of it before we run out, because we know the quality of improvement it'll make to your blank. Now, if you don't want to, that's fine, Marty. We just, I'm just calling. I want to make sure you understood. I want to make sure you knew that it's a risky proposition. I want to make sure you knew that if at all we're right, it'll increase or improve the quality of your blank by such and such or reduce the blank. That's pretty powerful, isn't it, Marty?
Well, it is. Can you talk about maybe some of your case histories or just a few examples?
I can tell you a simple example.
Okay.
I have a former client who's a software company in Oklahoma, and they sell to schools, a scholastic academic-based software that's many thousands of dollars. They did a mailing recently that did okay. It made money. I gave them a lecture for about a half hour on doing this. They decided to do it because I embarrassed and cajoled them into doing it. They called behind and found that tons of the teachers were interested, but they had questions that weren't asked. They had a little bit of fear that were overcome by some risk reversal. They wanted to know if it would apply to their situation because it wasn't clear. And by overcoming those four key points, they added 800% or eight times the sales to what they had done just by the letter. They made so much money that they celebrated and took every one of their staff to Hawaii for a week because they were so successful. I have another client that did a mailing that didn't work at all, and I looked at it and thought it was too conceptual and too abstract, and it wasn't an immediate response type thing. I asked them to get on the phone and follow behind and dimensionalize it and answer questions and summarize what the letter said. And they made hundreds of thousands of dollars by doing that. I have a client that does millions of dollars a year in business because he first sends a letter that just basically is designed to break even and position people so that when his very skilled selling team can go behind, they have a receptive audience that has been, the barrier has been broken. They're familiar with the concept. They've been introduced to it. It has credibility, but that's all they see the letter as being, is the credibility builder and the first beachhead to break the resistance barrier, not to sell anybody.
Can you articulate just a few points on how to make these calls so that they're well-received?
Yes. First of all, don't ever do them before. Always do them after a letter. Second, always respect the person and tell them the reason why you're making the call. And the reason why is for three points. Number one, to make sure they got it. Number two, to make sure they understood it. Number three, to make sure they realized what the implications of the offer was to them. And you might add number four, to recognize and be certain they understood that you've offered them a way to avail themselves of this, get an outcome, get a result on a risk-free basis, and reiterate what the risk-freeness is, and give them a chance to give you a commitment and take action over the phone, or at least to get to go to the next step. Try to make it easy to lower the barrier of entry. By that, I mean give them the chance if they can't take or make the fullest commitment. Don't say, okay, I'll call you later. Ask them to take at least an interim commitment, to let you send them something, let you try something out, let you talk to somebody, do something to keep going forward. Always respect them. Always encounter, always effect or transact the telephone communication in the context and with the reverence, the fact it is an informative, valuable service. You're not trying to sell. You're trying to do something that will enhance their lives, and you have an obligation to make sure they understand how, why, and that advantage is evident to them and to do everything in your power to make it possible.
As I think about this telemarketing back-end approach, communication opportunities are sold geometrically more than
it is if you look at it as not an onerous and intimidating selling situation, but a wonderful opportunity for you to add value by helping inform, educate, and advise somebody. When you look at it that way, it's you have an obligation to them, not only a responsibility, but a necessary certainty to bring this opportunity and this awareness to them for their benefit, not yours. Whether they buy or not is not important. That they know that it will change the quality and the satisfaction of their life and protect them and make living or make their business or make their transactions more productive is important for you to communicate.
Is there any way to set up the mailing piece or other contact points so that the telephone campaign might even be better?
Sure. The mailing piece should acknowledge them as being valuable. It should be one-on-one written. It should basically be empathic. It should tell them, start with the result they could get. Tell them, give them a reason why they can get that result. Give them some background. Give them some details. Follow the same basic essence element that I just detailed in the earlier part of this session and the session that preceded it. It should basically prove any claims you make in a way they can embrace by letting them in on a reason why, making a case. It should tell them what they should expect the improvement or the result to their life to be. It should tell them why they owe it to themselves to at least learn more or try it out. It should show them why they can try it out without risk. It should tell them what they should do to try it out without risk. It should give them a way they can contact you or take action now, but it should assure them that if they're not comfortable or ready, take action now. You as a courtesy are going to follow up just to make sure they understood, to answer any questions, to tell them about other people that have done it, and to give them a chance to take advantage without fear, risk, and without obligation.
As people apply your strategies, what is the most typical response you get back in terms of frustration? Because I can't believe that everyone that goes to a conference or consults with you immediately has perfect.
The biggest frustration, Marty, I'm stepping on you, but I understand the way you're taking it, and I want to be respectful of the limited time we've got. The biggest frustration that I experience from people, they don't always execute properly. They don't realize that everything doesn't work perfectly in the beginning, and they got to work at it. And I draw an analogy and say, well, did you ever take up sports or a hobby? I mean, do you do any kind of sports, Marty?
I've played just about every sport that you could do.
What are you the best at? What are you the very best at?
Probably table tennis.
Okay. How long have you been playing table tennis?
Roughly 30 years.
Okay. Could you go back 30 years, and I don't know your current age, but can you go back 30 years to when you were a young boy?
Okay.
And tell me when the first time you picked up a paddle and a ping pong ball, whether you were expert status? I mean, did you return every one? Did you play an A player? Did you serve aces every time? Did they all go over the net? Could you return everything? Could you put spin on it? Could you put reverse on it? Could you do all that stuff the first time or the second?
Actually, I did a pretty good job just to hold the paddle.
Okay, well, same thing is when people take up weightlifting. If they want to look like Hercules, and they normally can't lift 10 pounds, and a lot of people give up because they're exasperated. They aren't expert in the beginning. It's a process. And you got to realize, including adopting my techniques and my philosophies, it took most of you 30 years, 40 years, 20 years, your adult life, to get where you are and to cultivate and become proficient at your bad habits, or to become adroit at doing things in an inept or a sub-optimized way. You got to work a little bit and get comfort and get proficient and get more expert at doing things, and that requires experimenting with execution. So you should never put all your eggs in one basket and put mortgage the house on anything you try. You should do everything in little, non-threatening, inexpensive, non-dangerous tests, because they aren't all going to work. Not because the philosophies aren't powerful and invincible, but because your execution in the beginning may not be perfect. And it's a process. You keep trying.
Okay, talk just a little bit about the test, because that's key in your philosophy, and I don't think most of us do that.
Marty, everything in the world can be improved. You can gain proficiency by testing or by comparing one approach to another. And people basically unintentionally have probably used the concept of subconscious testing to get wherever they are in life, because whatever they do, probably they do, not because they do the best, but because whatever they're doing is the best way they have found to get whatever results they're getting. Whatever they do with their kids, whatever they do with their wife, whatever they do in their job, however they perform, if they have kept at it and do it relatively well and they keep making money at it, it's probably because whatever they do now is the best tested way they have found to perform that function or that communication or that transaction. When you test, if you test one approach against another, one proposition against another, one way of doing something against another, one way of articulating something against another, one way of positioning something against another, one price against another, one presentational approach against another, one package or combination of products or service against another, one risk reversal articulation against another, one hot button or premise against another or positioning, you will find that invariably one will outperform the other by a margin. The margin can be 10%, and in many cases it can be 2,000%, 20 times difference. When you constantly test multiple ways of doing something, you will always find a higher and better way of doing it. You owe it to yourself, first and foremost, to always optimize, and that means doing the highest job of performance you can from the least amount of effort. That only is evident by testing. Does that make sense?
Well, it makes sense, but you know better probably than anyone else. Most of us want to operate off of instinct.
Well, let me tell you the price you pay. The price you pay for conjecture, which is what happens when you don't test and when you just basically blindly and unilaterally do something because it's what you want to do or it feels right, is you lose opportunity. If you're content to realize or be paid or earn a third or a fourth you're content with having three or four times the frustration level, if you're content with ending up at the end of your work career with a fraction of what you could in money, in achievement, in net worth of the business, in health, if you're content with having every day be a fraction as enjoyable and as purposeful as it could be, you are very welcome to not test. It's your prerogative. It's a free world. This is America, land of opportunity, land of your own decisions.
What made you want to start testing yourself, or have you always done this?
I studied masters, people who made 10 times what other people doing something did, people who worked half the day but made four times the money as others, people who always smiled, people everybody respected, people who got joy out of life, and I studied what they did, and they were fanatical scientists of the testing mechanism. Science, every great discovery is a form of testing. And when they test, scientists don't content themselves with one result. They start, that's the base. They try to get improve upon it, get something that works better, that's more effective, more powerful. You owe yourself to be a life-based research scientist.
Okay, Jay, we have about 9 minutes left, and I don't know if this is fair to you or not. You tell me, is it possible for you to summarize the letter that you share with people? There is an architectural firm that practiced this strategy of preeminence, I think, in a way.
They did, yes.
I know you can't excerpt all of the letter in 9 minutes. Can you summarize how these people work? Because architectural firms sometimes are pretty staid.
Yeah, I'll try to give you at least a couple key points. First of all, they believe that everybody's business is basically a mirror of the very soul of the owner. And the owner's reflecting what they are as a human being, what they feel for others, their passion levels. And you got to realize that. Comes smackingly clear to everybody that works for you and that everybody you impact and everyone you try to deal with. They have an enormous respect for the dignity of human beings. They appeal to a person's dignity and they feel like they touch it. And they find when they do that, people respond back in a very dignified and respectful manner. So they have enormous respect for the intelligence and the value of humanity and mankind in the form of their employees, in the form of their suppliers, in the form of the people that they deal with. And let's see, when they respect them, they respect also the right people have to spend their money anywhere. They respect the right people have to excellent value and performance for what they do and what they spend money and commitment to. They respect people's rights to learn everything they can about the options available and everything they can about what's best for them. They respect people's rights to like or not like what this company does for them, and they are very mindful of the fact that they basically are in business to serve and provide the betterment of their customer, not for the customer to provide their betterment, although if they do serve the betterment of their customer, the customers are normally very inclined to serve the betterment of this company.
I want to hear about them taking the customers shopping.
Well, it's pretty interesting. They basically feel like it's important. It's an architectural firm, and they do things like no other architects. They take all their customers shopping for all the fixtures. They take them. They spend 20 hours. They invest with them. They make certain that part of that time they sit down and they bond with them in a very long, respectful, very intimate luncheon or dinner with them where they learn all about their hopes, their dreams, then they listen. And I'm going to make a point that I may have said in one of our earlier sessions or not. One of the greatest lessons I learned about life and connecting with people is that most people operate their whole philosophy on gaining popularity and being liked on an erroneous basis. People think that what the goal is to be interesting, and yet all you have to do to own people's hearts forever is be genuinely interested in them and learn to listen with respect and interest and a genuine commitment and curiosity and sense of wanting to know and learn and discover. It's real simple. It's real simple, Marty. But when these people take people shopping, they constantly learn and discover and listen to them, and it's a wonderful bonding process. They think listening is the key to everything they do. And when they listen, they don't just listen. They communicate to the people after they've had any meetings that they've listened, and they share with them what they think they've heard in a respectful manner so the people know that it was important. And they didn't just patronize them. They send them notes that summarize what they heard. They have long philosophies on listening, and they think listening is a translation. If you listen, it means you respect somebody. And you can't listen if you don't respect them. So it's important that you respect them. And in the course of their business, they never talk disparaging about any client behind their back. They always talk with respect and admiration and empathy for every client and everything they talk about with everybody in and around their business.
Tell the story about them, the architectural firm, listening to these people, and then when they actually end up building a model of the house.
Well, okay. It's very interesting. They hear and they make copious notes and they respond to that. But if somebody says, for example, whenever they're ready to build the house, the customer doesn't even know they're going to do it. They spend a not inconsequential amount of money and they build an exact 2-replica, 2-foot by approximately 4-foot model of the home. And they put cars in the driveway and people in the yard, and they adorn it with items and intricacies that manifest or personify what they've heard these people say is important to them. For example, there'd be a dog. If they have a dog, there'd be children by the barbecue or on the swings or in the pool. One time they had a customer that told that his dream was to own a Mercedes convertible and a Harley Davidson, and they put a Mercedes convertible in the drive and a Harley Davidson in the garage. And they just connect with people at a level that's incredible. And they really get a lot out of it. They really and truly take joyous delight in bringing people's dreams to life.
And the other thing I have to ask you to comment on is how one couple couldn't afford the whole package. And as they worked through this, they actually ended up saving some of the business.
They did. The people weren't going to use them because they were too expensive. And they showed people that they could take a couple of the processes away. And they showed them why it wouldn't be critical to the outcome and that those processes could be added at a later date if their finances or their desires offered. And they showed them that if what they wanted was this outcome, they would be doing themselves a disservice by compromising any of the other processes and going to somebody who would be cheaper but would eliminate these processes. And by respecting what they felt the couple wanted out of the transaction, they saved the transaction, they got great referrals from it, and the people loved them for it. And they made a lot of money from the transaction.
Wow. Well, Jay, it's been great talking to you. Do you give assignments here in the next month?
Well, I think the assignment that I would give everyone in the next month is to take the elements that we shared in this session and apply it for at least one solid week to every customer you come in contact with, every supplier you deal with, every employee or employer or coworker or colleague or associate you deal with, and definitely apply it in your personal life. And then send me a letter or send my publisher a letter and tell me what the outcome was. I think you won't believe the improvement, the profound impact it will have on the success you'll realize.
And I think maybe you answered the question I'm about to ask you earlier, and that is, how do you communicate this to your friends, loved ones, and coworkers? And you're suggesting, after listening to The Edge 5 times, than passing it along.
Well, you can, but it's 2 ways. I mean, yes, for their insight, people are saying, well, how do I get started? You get started naturally from a point of looking at people. When you change and transform the strategy of your life and the purpose, and you start looking at your purpose as being to enhance people's lives, it's automatic, Marty. There's no big problem. You have to sit and worry, how can I start? Will I get started? You get started. Does that make sense? It just happens.
We're just about out of time. One sentence to summarize. Jay Abraham, the Wizard's Edge, the marketing genius. If you could summarize Jay Abraham in a sentence, what would it be?
It would be hopefully one of the most proficient creators of value for others.
One of the most proficient creators of value for others. Terrific. Jay Abraham, thank you.
Thanks, Marty.
You've been listening to The Wizard's Edge with Jay Abraham. Thanks for listening. This is Marty Stacey, Communications Director. That's all for now.